First reading is from Matthew 26, and we're going from verses 36. Matthew 26 from verse 36, and it's on page 997 of the Church Bibles. Then Jesus went with his disciples to a place called Gethsemane, and he said to them, "Sit here while I go over there and pray." He took Peter and the two sons of Zebedee along with him, and he began to be sorrowful and troubled. Then he said to them, "My soul is overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death. Stay here and keep watch with me." Going a little farther, he fell with his face to the ground and prayed, "My Father, if it is possible, may this cup be taken from me, yet not as I will, but as you will." Then he returned to his disciples and found them sleeping. "Couldn't you men keep watch with me for 1 hour?" he asked Peter. "Watch and pray so that you will not fall into temptation. The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak." He went away a second time and prayed, "My Father, if it is not possible for this cup to be taken away unless I drink it, may your will be done." When he came back, he again found them sleeping because their eyes were heavy. So he left them and went away once more and prayed the third time, saying the same thing. Then he returned to the disciples and said to them, "Are you still sleeping and resting? Look, the hour has come, and the Son of Man is delivered into the hands of sinners. Rise, let us go. Here comes my betrayer." While he was still speaking, Judas, one of the 12, arrived. With him was a large crowd armed with swords and clubs, sent from the chief priests and the elders of the people. Now the betrayer had arranged a signal with them. "The one I kiss is the man. Arrest him." Going at once to Jesus, Judas said, "Greetings, Rabbi," and kissed him. Jesus replied, "Do what you came for, friend." Then the men stepped forward, seized Jesus, and arrested him. With that, one of Jesus' companions reached for his sword, drew it out, and struck the servant of the high priest, cutting off his ear. "Put your sword back in its place," Jesus said to him, "for all who draw the sword will die by the sword. Do you think I cannot call on my Father, and he will at once put at my disposal more than 12 legions of angels? But how then would the scriptures be fulfilled that say it must happen in this way?" In that hour, Jesus said to the crowd, "Am I leading a rebellion that you have come out with swords and clubs to capture me? Every day I sat in the temple courts teaching, and you did not arrest me. But this has all taken place that the writings of the prophets might be fulfilled." Then all the disciples deserted him and fled.
And continue reading from Matthew 26. Those who had arrested Jesus took him to Caiaphas, the high priest, where the teachers of the law and the elders had assembled. But Peter followed him at a distance, right up to the courtyard of the high priest. He entered and sat down with the guards to see the outcome. The chief priests and the whole Sanhedrin were looking for false evidence against Jesus so they could put him to death. But they did not find any, though many false witnesses came forward. Finally, two came forward and declared, "This fellow said, 'I am able to destroy the temple of God and rebuild it in 3 days.'" Then the high priest stood up and said to Jesus, "Are you not going to answer? What is this testimony that these men are bringing against you?" But Jesus remained silent. The high priest said to him, "I charge you under oath by the living God, tell us if you are the Messiah, the Son of God." "You have said so," Jesus replied. "But I say to all of you, from now on, you will see the Son of Man sitting at the right hand of the Mighty One and coming on the clouds of heaven." Then the high priest tore his clothes and said, "He has spoken blasphemy. Why do we need any more witnesses? Look, "Now you've heard the blasphemy. What do you think?" "He is worthy of death," they answered. Then they spit in his face and struck him with their fists. Others slapped him and said, "Prophesy to us, Messiah, who hit you?" Now Peter was sitting out in the courtyard, and a servant girl came to him. "You also were with Jesus of Galilee," she said. But he denied it before them all. "I don't know what you're talking about," he said. Then he went out to the gateway, where another servant girl saw him, and said to the people there, "This fellow was with Jesus of Nazareth." He denied it again with an oath. "I don't know the man." After a little while, those standing there went up to Peter and said, "Surely you are one of them. Your accent gives you away." Then he began to call down curses, and he swore to them, "I don't know the man." Immediately, a rooster crowed. Then Peter remembered the word Jesus had spoken. "Before the rooster crows, you will disown me 3 times. And he went outside and wept bitterly.
Early in the morning, all the chief priests and the elders of the people made their plans how to have Jesus executed. So they bound him, led him away, and handed him over to Pilate the governor. When Judas, who had betrayed him, saw that Jesus was condemned, he was seized with remorse and returned the 30 pieces of silver to the chief priests and the elders. "I have sinned," he said, "for I have betrayed innocent blood." "What is that to us?" they replied. "That's your responsibility." So Judas threw the money into the temple and left. Then he went away and hanged himself. The chief priest picked up the coins and said, "It is against the law to put this into the treasury, since it is blood money." So they decided to use the money to buy the potter's field as a burial place for foreigners. That is why it has been called the field of blood to this day. Then what was spoken by Jeremiah the prophet was fulfilled. They took the 30 pieces of silver, the price set on him by the people of Israel, and they used them to buy the potter's field, as the Lord commanded me. Meanwhile, Jesus stood before the governor, and the governor asked him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" "You have said so," Jesus replied. When he was accused by the chief priests and the elders, he gave no answer. Then Pilate asked him, "Don't you hear the testimony they are bringing against you?" But Jesus made no reply, not even to a single charge, to the great amazement of the governor. Now it was the governor's custom at the festival to release a prisoner chosen by the crowd. At that time they had a well-known prisoner whose name was Jesus Barabbas. So when the crowd had gathered, Pilate asked them, "Which one do you want me to release to you, Jesus Barabbas or Jesus who is called the Messiah?" For he knew it was out of self-interest that they had handed Jesus over to him. While Pilate was sitting on the judge's seat, his wife sent him this message: "Don't have anything to do with that innocent man, for I have suffered a great deal today in a dream because of him." But the chief priests and the elders persuaded the crowd to ask for Barabbas and to have Jesus executed. "Which of the two do you want me to release to you?" asked the governor. "Barabbas," they answered. "What shall I do then with Jesus, who is called the Messiah?" Pilate asked. They all answered, "Crucify him." "Why? What crime has he committed?" asked Pilate. But they all shouted all the louder, "Crucify him." When Pilate saw that he was getting nowhere, but that instead an uproar was starting, he took water and washed his hands in front of the crowd. "I am innocent of this man's blood," he said. "It is your responsibility." All the people answered, "His blood is on us and on our children." Then he released Barabbas to them, but he had Jesus flogged and handed him over to be crucified.
Then the governor's soldiers took Jesus into the praetorium and gathered the whole company of soldiers round him. They stripped him and put a scarlet robe on him, and then twisted together a crown of thorns and set it on his head. They put a staff in his right hand. Then they knelt in front of him and mocked him. "Hail, King of the Jews," they said. They spat on him and took the staff and struck him on the head again and again. After they had mocked him, they took off the robe and put his own clothes on him. Then they led him away to crucify him. As they were going out, they met a man from Cyrene named Simon, and they forced him to carry the cross. They came to a place called Golgotha, which means the place of the skull. There they offered Jesus wine to drink, mixed with gall, but after tasting it, he refused to drink it. When they had crucified him, they divided up his clothes by casting lots. And sitting down, they kept watch over him there. Above his head, they placed the written charge against him: "This is Jesus, the King of the Jews." Two rebels were crucified with him, one on his right and one on his left. Those who passed by hurled insults at him, shaking their heads and saying, "You who are going to destroy the temple and build it in 3 days, save yourself. Come down from the cross if you are the Son of God." In the same way, the chief priests, the teachers of the law, and the elders mocked him. "He saved others," they said, "but he can't save himself. He's the King of Israel. Let him come down from the cross, and then we'll believe in him. He trusts in God. Let God rescue him now if he wants him. But he said, 'I am the Son of God.'" In the same way, the rebels who were crucified with him also heaped insults on him. From noon until 3 PM, darkness came over all the land. About 3 PM, Jesus cried out in a loud voice, "Eli, Eli, lema sabachthani," which means, my God, why have you forsaken me?" When some of those standing there heard this, they said, "He's calling Elijah." Immediately, one of them ran and got a sponge. He filled it with wine vinegar, put it on a staff, and offered it to Jesus to drink. The rest said, "Now leave him alone. Let's see if Elijah comes to save him." And when Jesus had cried out again in a loud voice, he gave up his spirit. At that moment, the curtain of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom. The earth shook, the rocks split, and the tombs broke open. The bodies of many holy people who had died were raised to life. They came out of the tombs after Jesus' resurrection and went into the holy city and appeared to many people. When the centurion and those with him who were guarding Jesus saw the earthquake and all that had happened, they were terrified and exclaimed, "Surely he was the Son of God." Many women were there, watching from a distance. They had followed Jesus from Galilee to care for his needs. Among them were Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James and Joseph, and Mary the mother of Zebedee's sons.
God uses many different pictures in the Bible to help us understand the events that we just had told to us. The cross achieved, it's like he tear down a wall, a barrier between sinful humanity and a holy God. The cross is like a lifeboat. He is the ark and he shelters us from the judgment to come. The cross is like a scapegoat that we put our sin on Jesus' head and he takes it far away from us. Functionally, the cross displays to us the majesty and the mercy of God. It is the turning point of human history. But did you notice the Garden of Gethsemane we had read to us? It's in Matthew chapter 26. And if you have a green Bible, you may want to open it and turn back to it from verses 36 to 46, page 997. You see, in the Garden of Gethsemane, we're not just confronted with the function of the cross, but the cost. What did it mean For Jesus himself, the spotless God-man, to experience the cross for you and for me. The reading is actually uncomfortable because it is so uncharacteristic of Jesus. Fearless Jesus, commanding a life-threatening storm to be still. Fearless Jesus, who will look at the religious leaders on the Sabbath and heal a man, knowing that it will result in them plotting to kill him. Fearless Jesus is in great anguish, deep distress. He's on his knees with his face to the ground, pleading with his heavenly Father for a different path. Why is Jesus so different in Gethsemane? It's because we're not just seeing the function of the cross. We're seeing the cost of the cross for Jesus. And three brief elements for us to reflect on this morning. You see, Jesus is facing, firstly, the cup. Did you see that in verse 39 of chapter 26? Let me read it to you. Going a little farther, he fell on his face to the ground and prayed, "My Father, if it is possible, may this cup be taken from me, yet not as I will, but as you will." Three times he prays about the cup. What's the cup? Many of you will know. In the Old Testament, it is an image that God uses to represent his anger and punishment on human sin. I remember reading during the height of the COVID pandemic that some scientific maths buff had calculated, because the virus was so small, he must have been wrong, but he reckoned you could take all the virus across the world and you could fit it in a can of Coke. All that destructive power fitted in the can of a soft drink. Now, can you imagine drinking that can of Coke? Can you imagine all the virus and all the destructive power being taken in on yourself and out of the world? When Jesus is looking at the cross, he is seeing a cup, but it's not a cup of a virus. It's the sin of all the world. Every wicked action, every wicked thought, every bit of wrong and hurt from billions of people across human history into one drink. And it's not just the sin. It's the judgment of God on all of it. That's the cup that Jesus is having to drink. Isn't that too much to bear? See, the true horror of the cross, it's not the physical side, which is awful. It's the spiritual reality of what is happening. Matt Searles puts it brilliantly in his little devotional. He puts it like this. Now he, which is Jesus, must not simply live among sinners, itself an agony for someone so pure, but be made sin, taking on himself the vileness and filth of human perversion. The smile of the Father will turn to forsakenness of the Father as he punishes Jesus with a great and terrifying holiness. Jesus faces the cup. It's why he shrinks back in horror. But secondly, he also faces it alone. You know, as he faces this moment, Jesus brings three of his closest disciples to be with him, to watch. to pray. Here is Christ in his humanity, and he wants the presence of others with him. Don't we all? None of us want to face difficult things on our own. We want the eyes of others on us, supporting us, affirming us, being close to us, giving us strength to face the thing. We need others. And here is Jesus facing the most horrific event in the history of the universe, and his closest friends snore. The friends who said, "We will die with you, Jesus." But within a matter of hours, they'll have deserted him and fled and denied him. And yet their inability to pray even for a few minutes show us we need him. There is only one pure, spotless lamb who can drink this cup. This is something we cannot do to save ourselves. He faces the cup. He faces it alone. And the third thing to notice, he faces it willingly. It's the third thing, he faces it willingly. The dozy-eyed disciples, he goes to them in verses 45 and 46, and he says these words, "Look, the hour has come. The Son of Man is delivered into the hand of sinners. Rise, let us go. If we take an exit on the left out of the Garden of Gethsemane, we can get away. We can escape." No, he doesn't say that. Verse 46, he says, "Rise, let us go. Here comes my betrayer." Jesus knows what he faces. He knows the horrific cost for him personally. But knowing there is no other way, boldly, bravely, alone, he goes to his death. Why? Why? John's Gospel tells us why. It is love. For God so loved the world that he gave his one and only Son. The Good Shepherd Jesus, he loves his Father. He loves his people, and he willingly lays his life down for his sheep. Sheep who are sleepy. Sheep who are broken. Sheep who are rebellious. Sheep who are undeserving. Sheep whose spirits are willing, but bodies are weak. Sheep like you. Sheep like me. He drinks the cup for you. There's no other way to be right with God and avoid the judgment and hell we deserve. He drinks the cup for you. And some of us need to take the first step and trust him as our Savior and King and friend. Some of us will be sheep this morning who are feeling shaky and have been failures. And we think, how can we come close to him after we've done that again? He knows. He knows what you were like. He knows what you are like. And he still went willingly for you. All of us need assurance. And we need to know he drank the judgment of God down to its dregs. There is absolutely no condemnation left for those who are in Christ Jesus. He faced the cup. He faced it alone. He faced it willingly. Here he is, weak, in such pain, so scared, so alone, and yet he does it all for us. This is our God. May God bless his word.